Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's February the 20th and today we'd like to welcome Tone Go, Chairman of GS Technologies, and Shane Tan, newly appointed COO of GST. Welcome Tone and Shane, how are you today?
We are doing fabulous. Thanks Phil, Kevin.
Excellent.
Totally appreciate this Sunday Roast session.
Yeah, I mean you're in Singapore, right? What's it like over there?
You know, all year round, 24/7, 365, we have very hot, humid weather.
Yeah.
Just in case you feel too cold, you're welcome to come over here. I'll be the host.
Yeah.
Make sure that I'll show you.
I've actually been before. I remember going around there. I think I went to a place called Lao Passat and had all the horses.
I love
it. Yeah, it's brilliant down there. Ended up a bit of a heavy night. I'm quite like my drink and I ended up in Orchard Towers. It's something I'll never forget.
Yeah, weather-wise, it's lovely. I'm sure you folks prefer to be here this time of the year. But it's been good. I was in the U.S. for a long time and then China for a long time, altogether 35 years. I spent quite a bit of time when I was taking the company public, GST, originally called Golden Saint, and that was 2018. So just that year alone, I had spent 4 months total in the city of London, and I have to tell you again, I love it. I'm waiting to come back. Yeah,
it's a good city. So, do you want to give us a bit more background? So start off talking about progress in 2021, because that seemed to be quite a stellar year for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, last year was a banner year, spectacular in many ways. We are a technology firm, an ICT player in the region, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Taiwan, you name it, all of Southeast Asia and some parts of China. So I took the company public, like everyone know, 2018, November the 22nd. So EMS was the company that I took public, which is still, as we speak, a wholly owned subsidiary. And this company, believe it or not, powerhouse locally, and they've always done well. It's year number 30, believe it or not. So very established, got loads of good corporate clients. So what we do, it's ICT, which is telco stuff, which is putting up systems, the whole network, intelligent buildings. And so we were going into data center, and probably one of your questions later could be, we had signed up with the largest Thailand conglomerate. If you remember, I had spoken about that. So that's pending. So it's a data center in Thailand, but because of the COVID situation for the past 2 years, it's been put on hold. And so, I'm not one guy to put things on hold and completely not do something else. I think my job really primarily is to value add and answer to our shareholders. And I think last year, so I'm circling back, 2021 was just an amazing year, pivotal. So the absolute transformation came around when I was able to source for new partners, so to speak, the legendary blockchain gentleman called Jack Bai. You can Google his name. He's been in this space for a long time. Right. And then with Shane Tan, they came together as a pair. I immediately boarded them on the main GST board. And that was January of last year. And, share price went up. We've been putting the pieces together. We've planned and actually done acquisition. One of the big one is going to be completed fairly soon. So that was 2021.
Yeah.
So much to speak about. And EMS is slowly coming out from the COVID situation and definitely doing better than a year and a half ago.
And obviously, Shane, welcome, Shane. And, you know, you're obviously being made COO, previously on the board. Do you want to tell us a bit more about some of the exciting technologies that are being worked?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so a little bit of my background. Before coming on board GST as the executive director, I was actually the co-founder and CMO of Cochlear's platform as well. Jack Bai, which is the current GST CEO, is also a co-founder of the platform. So we actually founded the platform in 2019 and basically focused on onboarding enterprises to utilize our blockchain services to do decentralized finance and payment services. That was initially our positioning of the platform, right? So we were actually working with many companies all over Southeast Asia, public companies, some public limited companies. We have worked with Australian listed companies, and one of them is called iCentric then. And then after that, in 2020, 2021, that was when we got involved with GST. So when we came on board GST, clearly GST was looking for a new area, basically exciting area, new area to expand into, where they could be an early mover and gain a good foothold in the space. And so that was when we decided, okay, how about let's come on board the team. And we were actually appointed, I think, in October, officially October, November 2021, as the CEO and COO of the company. And then that was when the wheel started to turn, right? We started to go very deeply into Angra acquisition, which is one of the main pieces that we have put together to help GST move forward as a fintech powerhouse. So I'm sure you have already read up about some of the pieces about Angra. It has about 6 years operating track record in fintech. It's been focused on FX as well as remittance services, mainly B2B. We had signed the conditional sales and purchase agreement on the 5th of October 2021. And then due diligence has been completed the month after. I think it's November. And right now, we have submitted already the CIC application, the change in control application, and which is in accordance with the Section 179 of the Financial Services and Markets Act, right? So due to a lot of other things that's ongoing with the FCA, obviously it's not ideal, but the FCA is extremely short-handed. That's what we've heard, as well as they're currently in the midst of receiving very, very high loads of application, and hence the application was pretty delayed. But still, we are glad to have Rodolfo on board with us. He continued to deliver stellar results for Angra before the acquisition, and post-acquisition, we will still have him around to integrate Angra with GST. So that's on the fintech piece. And the update with Angra that's been ongoing. And then on the other side, we are actually busy working on the technology. So if you have read up a little bit about the Wise MPay collaboration agreement, right? We have several pieces that we have to put together. Basically, one, we have launched the four enterprise chains, right? So which is pegged to the four currencies, the US dollar, the pound, the euro, and the yuan. So we have those four chains successfully tested, successfully launched as well. The good thing is right now we are ready to put these four enterprise blockchains into commercialization phase. So while we are in the process of gaining and getting all the necessary regulatory approvals, we are also looking at ways that we can actually mobilize some opportunities that we have to bring these four enterprise chains, four stable coins, four digital currencies to market. So that was why we recently got involved with a Lithuanian crypto exchange license company. Name is UAB Glindala. We have signed the SPA for change in control as well for the company. So right now the process has already started. We plan to integrate the four digital currencies with the exchange firstly. And then after that, we begin to onboard users to start using these four digital currencies. And eventually, this will all come to play
in our overall fintech plan, right?
So presumably that'll be transactions through blockchain ledgers, yes. and that will presumably be used in place of wire transfers that can generally take several days. So really, it's kind of a disruptive technology within the banking sector, right?
It is. It is cheaper, it is faster, it's more secure to do this form of payment transaction than any other existing payment system.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt for a second, but I think this acquisition piece of a crypto exchange is 100% complementary, and it would accessorize blockchain fintech game plan that we have. And so, and on one hand, it's also not just so that it's more efficient, better control, but actually the cost will come down quite a bit.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so Shane. So the simple question is, I want to transfer, or a business wants to transfer $1 million from, I currently live in Egypt, so I want to transfer from Egypt to a company that's based in Shanghai. What do I do?
Okay, very simple. So if, let's say the touch point is the crypto exchange, all you need to do right now basically is be onboarded as an institutional client on the exchange platform. You will undergo full KYC AML, so we'll make sure that we know who the guy is we're dealing with. And then we will check your source of funds, and then you deposit your fiat currency into our designated bank account, which is basically the funding account. So once you've deposited the funding, we will basically be able to convert those balances into the designated digital currency. So if you deposit US dollar, for example, or the euro, for example, we will convert it into the digital euro and the digital dollar in your ledger, right, in your wallet. And then from there, as a user, you are able to determine where you want to send this money to. So for a start, the user will be able to send internally, basically sending from wallet A to wallet B, another user who is already using the exchange account. And in the future, we plan to basically be able to allow users to create their own non-custodial wallets. That's what we call it, right? So in the future, you are able to send those money out into individual wallets, and they will be able to cash out through us the same way. So that is how the process looks like from more or less from
start to finish. So what you're saying is the business I'm sending the money to also has to have a wallet with you, or you're going to send it to the bank?
They also need to have a wallet with us. And then once they have done the redemption with us, they have converted the digital currency back to fiat, we will send the money back into their bank account.
Okay, so how is that quicker? I want to understand this.
Okay.
Is that process quicker? Instantaneous, or because it still has to go to the bank, no?
Okay, no. So what happens is basically the user, the minute they deposit the cash, all those is instant. And then after that, once they receive their digital currency, to move the money from point A to point B, it basically takes less than 10 seconds to move the money between wallets, right? So we establish that. And then from an individual or a business point of view, when they utilize our accounts, similarly, they will do a redemption process, and the process is instant, and we charge minimal or no fees basically in that transaction. And because we are using domestic payment system, I repeat, domestic payment system, all of these transactions deposits are instant. So in Singapore, we call it the fast transfer system, where there is basically no fees at all, and you get the money instantaneously deposited in your bank account. So this is what we offer, basically using a innovative payment rail that gives you instant, quick, cheap payments, very little fees, and instant finality, basically instant finality. And then when you redeem them back for fiat, you get those funds into your bank account using local payment system. Yeah. So okay, that is
very good. Very good. So if I put $1 million in your Lithuanian crypto exchange in my wallet,
yeah,
and I want to send 500,000 of those dollars in yuan or in yuan to China to a company, and they have a wallet, how does that work?
Okay, so definitely both parties must already be onboarded on the platform. So
yep, agreed.
On our platform, we will basically allow the financial institution or the business to transact, to exchange one digital currency for the other. You can actually change your digital dollar back for fiat or digital dollar back for the digital yuan. So we will have this exchange feature enabled on this platform to give you near mid-market rates, exchange convertible rates. And then from there, the user is able to process these transactions, redeem this yuan from the account, and then we will have a local bank account there to pay out to the user in the denominator.
Okay, current. Great. I understand. So how does GST make money on this?
Okay, very simple. Okay, so firstly, we actually collect user deposits, right? So when they deposit this cash with us, we are actually using, we actually ensure that all of this cash are held one-to-one. So for every dollar you deposit, there will be a fully backed one US dollar in our bank account when we issue a digital currency into your digital wallet, right? But what we do with this $1 that we have collected is that we put them into short-term treasury notes, and then we make a return, some overnight returns out of these treasury notes. And that is how we generate, I would say, short-term income for the company. That's one, earning on deposits, which is nothing new at all. It is something most e-wallet companies are doing.
Pretty standard.
Yes, pretty standard with e-wallet fintech business, right? And second thing is we actually charge the user for every time they do a redemption. So deposits are free, right? But whenever you do a redemption, so that is where we will charge a service fee. So the service fee costs you anywhere between 5 and 10 pounds, right? So that is all that you need to pay in order to use the network.
Is it a bit like a gas fee type thing on a transactional fee type?
No, it's just a redemption.
Just a redemption,
fee.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a transaction fee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we make money on FX.
Yeah. So every time you do the third component, which Tony has mentioned, is basically every time you convert from one currency to the other, there are interchange fees that we will make. We will profit.
So the £5 or £10 that you're talking about charging, that would be if I moved £1 million or if I moved £20, you're still going to charge the same transaction fee, or it's going to be a small percentage?
The transaction fee will always be standard. At this point, we are not leaving it as a percentage. It is always a standard withdrawal processing fee. Yeah.
Okay, because you want to attract as much cash as possible, because you're making most of your money is being made by FX transactions and also the money being held on short-term securities.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. Have you any idea what sort of percentage on the amount of money that you think you can make on an annual basis? If you have $100 million invested on this exchange, what sort of money do you think you can make in percentage terms per annum?
Are you referring from an operator's standpoint or from a
deposit? From an operator's standpoint, from GST's point of view, what are they going to make? If you have £100 million invested, or dollars, or whatever currency you want to say, I presume you have run some figures about the profitability of that system. How much percentage would you make?
Okay.
Obviously, it's interest rate dependent as well, obviously. So I accept that, but I just want an idea.
A ballpark figure. Yeah.
Yeah. Generally, we do not put the entire reserve into short-term securities. It could be, usually it's anywhere between 20 to 30% of your cash reserves that you put into overnight securities. And that should generate anywhere between 5 and 10 bips of return for holding these securities in those short-term treasuries.
Okay, 5 to 10 bits per day?
5 to 10 bits per week.
Per week, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking maybe 4 or 5% over the year. Okay, or 2 to 5%, depending on the interest rates that one assesses. Okay, it seemed to me that you bought the Lithuanian crypto exchange. This was for £27,500. This seems very cheap.
Okay, so the crypto exchange license is basically a young company right now that is being established. It has no existing business in there. It holds the license, the ability for us to go into the exchange business. And then basically we are leveraging this license in order to operate in a crypto-friendly jurisdiction. So across Europe and the UK, Lithuania has come up as one of the most regulatory-friendly states for the issuance of stablecoin as well as for the exchange of digital assets. And that's the reason why we have gone so swiftly and to acquire a company in Lithuania and then continue on the process to get our necessary license to issue the stablecoins and conduct the exchange of stablecoins as well as digital assets in that nation state. Yeah.
I guess, okay. You know, Kevin, you want to look at it like we paid that money to acquire the license.
Yes, yes, I see that now that you've said it. Yeah, that's good.
So it's kind of a shell company right now. We got to go and build it. And there are many components. Putting a crypto exchange business together does take quite a bit of, investment dollars. But I think we had mentioned even on our RNS, we are not going to be putting in too much investment dollars. That's not really our game plan. We don't want to be Binance or some big company dream like that. We are first, doing this remittance, kind of a fintech blockchain angle, and we're going to be pressing on and going deep in that front. So when we do that, we do require, and if it is complementary to the game plan, our business plan, our revenue model on the remittance, the new banking model, it's very helpful to go early and buy an exchange, a crypto exchange. That will go a long way, yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more, Shane, about the tokens also that have been issued?
Okay.
So 100 million tokens, Coculus?
Yes.
Okay. So the
token. Tell me how that fits in.
Yeah, the Coculus tokens have been issued basically to allow GST, basically GS Technologies, to become a node validator. So basically you can, you have the rights and the permissions to register transactions onto the blockchain ledger. So that's exactly what it does. So by having 100 million stake tokens, that will allow them, GST about, say, 1%, you will be able to generate about 1% of all transaction volumes that is happening on the Coculus networks and be able to earn those gas fees. So that is the returns for the investment for those tokens for GST.
Okay, so again, please try and explain how they will be monetized. What happens and what fees are paid to GST?
Okay, very simple. Okay, so think of it this way. So right now, every single transaction that goes on to the Coculus blockchain network, right, it requires 0.1 coal for the transaction to take place. So that, think of it as the gas fees, right? So right now, if there is one transaction, 0.1 token goes in. If there is 10 transactions, there's one coal token that is being earned as gas fees for the validator. So in any given block, if let's say there are 100 transactions, so there will be 10 coal tokens that will be given to that particular validator who has successfully validated the block. And right now, GST has 1%, right? So it's about 1%, 1 out of 100% chance to mine the next block successfully. So it depends on how much transactions that has happened, and the gas fees is standard, which is 0.1 gas fees that's being earned per transaction, and then GST will earn that amount based on its stake in the network. So that is exactly how it works. So it's very hard to put a dollar cent to how much can be earned on the transaction or from this the amount of 100 million coal tokens that he has put in the network. You can't put a dollar or cent, but you can definitely tell what is the percentage chance of it successfully generating a block and generally how much fees are being paid per transaction. That is basically the metric that GST has in order to move forward. And the only reason why GST actually went deeply into this is actually we are building four chains on top of the network on its own. So we expect a lot of those transactions to happen, right? So if you have 100 customers doing 100 transactions a day, we are looking like there will be 10,000 transactions, and each transaction is paying 0.1 coal. So there's 100 coal to be earned. So because of the velocity or the frequency of this transaction,
there is I see that.
Motivation for them to generate or become a validator on the node itself.
And do these coins effectively go up in value as time goes by? If
transactions,
as it becomes busier and busier, it's more expensive to
use
these coins. I mean, from the point of view of taking over a lot of these transactions from cross border and also for the banks themselves, how quickly or how long do you think this is going to take to become something that we use? You know, will I use this in a year's time? Will I use this? I don't know. Am I going to be at the airport and I give the man $1,000 and I want a digital transaction in my wallet so I don't have to carry, you know, $5,000 to the US, but I've actually got this digital wallet with me. Is this, I mean, explain to me how it works, because I really want to know how we're going to use it. Or is it just business to business?
Okay, so this whole stablecoin business, this sector on its own, is already worth like $180 billion or more, right? Up from less than 10 billion 2 years ago. So that's how much and how quick this adoption has grown. The earlier use cases for this sort of stablecoins are basically users holding and hedging their positions with digital currency. So you know how Bitcoin goes down and it goes up, and they need a stable digital currency that they can enter into to hold the value that they have from the trading profits.
Sort of USDT.
It's like a USDT. So people are familiar with the concept of USDT and USDC. So retail investors are already using stablecoins for this use case. But gradually and over time, actually, we're seeing more and more businesses that are already beginning to open up to this sort of payment. For this sort of innovative payment system when it comes to B2B payments. So they are looking to use this sort of transactions to pay for, say, supplies, invoicing, so on and so forth. So the other day, I was just speaking to this Sri Lankan distributor of Oracle software, right? So they are actually looking to collect some of these Sri Lankan dollars and be able to convert them easily into US dollars and move them into a digital currency so that they can transact at speeds way faster than current payment system allow. And the volumes are anywhere between 3 and 5 million US dollars every month. So you must understand that the adoption for business is also growing dramatically. And if I'm not wrong, B2B payments is already valued at some 870 billion US dollars or more globally. So it's not hard to imagine that stablecoin industry and this whole payment will take off in B2B, and this whole marketplace could grow to $1 trillion or more. It's in that we're using a very new piece of technology and getting people to understand how easy it is for them to sign up for an account, be able to deposit those monies and have those digital currencies have sit in their digital wallet, quite simply move those money just by scanning this a QR code and sending that money from, say, Singapore to UK in 10 seconds, and then the redemption is instantaneous. And all of these fees are a fraction of what you're paying right now to the
traditional banks. Yeah,
to the banks.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can give you an example. I transfer money into PayPal from a few different places, and then I can transfer that money into my bank account. Well, from the supplier to PayPal to my account is I can do it within 2 minutes. Okay, basically it goes from that to PayPal. Yeah, but it cost me about 4.5%.
Exactly.
Oh, costly. Yeah. So
now that's what PayPal makes. Yes. I don't pay anything then to put it into my bank account. But ultimately, you're talking about cutting out that middleman that is very costly for many people.
You're right.
Yeah.
Making finance ready and easy to access for the for every guy, every man on the street.
I think fintech using blockchain is the way to go. I told the group CEO that you know, we don't have to be the smartest, but we really need to do the right thing at the right time in the right space.
Yeah.
You know, this thing is gonna just totally take off. You know, it's going mainstream. Central bankers are panicking, and the Feds, you know, are trying to, you know, sabotage. But you know, the market is just enormous. We're talking multi-trillion dollars on a global scale. You don't do it now, when?
Yeah.
You better catch on the train because it's really gone, you know. And so I just feel that, you know, we are on the right track, and it does take a little bit of time, just like this little Angra acquisition.
Yeah.
You know, it's because of FCA, and they can drag their tail for too long. It's around the corner. We want to stay positive.
And there's big delays in the UK now with the FCA. We know companies that have been waiting for listings, and it's taking so much time.
They are just totally lack of manpower. Mm. Now, so to end on a positive note, this year is going to be just an amazing year, spectacular year. And we're loving it. So
We will look forward to seeing some of it coming to fruition, and this what we like as to describe as disruptive technology.
Yes.
Yes.
Thanks, Phil. This has been a wonderful session.
Tongo and Shane Tan, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys. God bless. And you'll never walk alone.
Yes. Yeah. Liverpool.
Cheers, guys.
Yes.
Right.
Bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
Greetings from Singapore.
Well, it's certainly an exciting technology there. They've got some very interesting tech on board. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, I think it could blow not just the banking world clean apart, but I think, you know, a lot of these payment platforms like PayPal and the business payment thing really got me excited, actually, I have to say. You know, at a low rate, if you can get the actual volumes going through there, then the sort of margin is very low. But if you get the revenues going through there, then it's going to produce some serious revenue for the company.
And you know what? Hot off the press, as you probably saw come in, that was announced, obviously, after we recorded that, the interview was that they got FCA approval for the change of control of Angra Limited, which obviously sent shockwaves through it. And it really did well, didn't it?
Yeah, it's done very well on Friday in the markets. And I think it should keep on going. I mean, the potential now is everything's in place. They've got the crypto. Where was it that was? Lithuania, I think it was. They've got the crypto in Lithuania. They've got the FCA regulated organization, which was Angra, which basically was FX payment platform, I think, and international payment platform to do their business in the UK. I mean, even I think on the interview, was it Shane was talking about, you know, he'd been talking to a guy who has $4 million a month as payments that are going through for one of the big companies that he was talking about. He did mention the company, but I don't remember what it was now. You know, that's 50 million straight off there if that's an annual deal, you know, and they're going to be making a cut on each of that and possibly getting some overnight money on it and FX payments as well. So there's like three different ways that they can get paid.
Yeah.
And then the coins, I don't fully understand those.
The stable coin, yeah. I mean, yeah. The thing with this one is it's exciting because it's now the start of enabling their system. So they're using Angra as effectively that vehicle now to take the control. They've changed of the control of Angra, and they're going to be able to move their system forward, basically. You know, that's the development of their blockchain-enabled neobanking business, which obviously provides an established, appropriate regulated base on which to build their UK business. So it really is the piece of pie that was missing that then enables them to actually further their system now, you know. Yeah. And obviously we're in collaboration with their partner Wise MPay, who seem to be, you know, they're quite big, aren't they?
I mean, I think again Shane had said that this whole stable coin thing had gone from 10 billion to 180 billion, was it, in a matter of a couple of years, and by all accounts it's just going to continue ongoing. I mean, if companies can basically pay a fraction of a percentage to transfer all their payments all around the world, then pay a bank a fixed fee every time they do it, or PayPal 4%, or whatever Alipay or whoever it happens to be.
It's disruptive, and I like that, because as you say, if you've ever tried moving money internationally, it can take 4 or 5 days for that to clear, and then you get stung on, even if you do it via your bank, forget PayPal. I mean, their charges, as you say, are pretty horrendous. But even your bank, in the FX trade, you know, in the change between GBP and the foreign currency, you get probably raped about 10% of the money that comes in.
Yeah, no, my wife went to the bank the other day with my card to take some money out from my UK bank account. And she had the option of taking the money as British pounds or as Egyptian pounds. And she did one of each because she had to take out two amounts. And the difference was 10% if we declared we wanted it to go through as British pounds in an Egyptian bank. So the bank were making 10% on that transaction. Thank goodness it wasn't a large amount of money, but you can imagine if it's £1 million and it's even 2 or 3%, it's huge. And then they're talking about, you know, charging a fraction of a percent or even just a fixed fee. You know, it adds up.
You know, it's a classic one, isn't it? When you're on holiday in, say, Spain or something, and you know, you may not know this, of course, and this could be a bit of a tip for travellers, is when you go to the ATM and you draw your money out and it asks you, do you want it in the euros or do you want it in pounds? And if you select the wrong one, if you select pounds, you know, as in the conversion rate, you know, that's 10%. You're going to lose 10% of your money. You always go, always choose the local currency, you know. Simple.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But most people don't know it is right. And most people think, oh, I'll take British pounds because then I know.
Stronger, it's stronger.
Well, no, it's they know then, I've taken 200 English pounds out. That's okay.
Yeah, they want to see that they were charged £33.74 rather than €45, €50, exactly.
But as we've said, that's 10%. That's normally anything from, I think, 6 to 10% is coming off an FX transaction.
Well, I mean, what's your target on that one? What would you say? I mean, looking at the market cap, which is sat around, what are we on now? We're probably up to about 35 million, 35.6, so call it 36 million now, currently at 2.3p, end of trading. What do you think it can do? Do you think that can get up to an 80 million market cap, or it's, you know, 50 million, 60 million, something like that, short time?
I personally think it can be easily that and possibly higher, you know. I think 80 to 100 million pounds for something that's going to actually change the way people do the banking. If you think about it from a sort of revenue perspective, can they create 15 million to 20 million in revenue and be worth at least 100 million? And 90% of that is profit. Probably, because the reality is it's all system driven. So once they've got everything in place, it's not people driven, it's system driven. So I think even the revenue figures I've stated are probably quite high for 100 million market cap. So yeah. I personally think, yeah, I mean, I think it's a blue sky company. You know, it really could be worth a lot of money, but who knows? They've obviously gotten, now they have all the pieces in place. Now will be the truth, yeah. You know.
Now they need to deliver. I mean, it certainly looks like they're setting the board up with Jack Bai on board, you know, and also obviously Shane Tan brought in Mr. Calculus and that. You know, they seem to be getting the right people in the right places at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Good. And the other business, I suppose, which was discussed was EME, was it? And effectively, they should be producing nearly enough money to run the company while the revenues build up. So yeah, I see it as it's very exciting. Good. And I didn't know anything about it really before we did the research.
Well, that's the thing is you see all these words, you know, blockchain and the tech, but actually I never really understood it, exactly what it was and exactly how they were doing things. It's, don't get me wrong, it's still very much it's a very complicated system, isn't it, really? You know what I mean? It's not an easy technology to understand some of it.
I don't think it's that easy to understand, but from the discussions we had with them, I think it's fairly easy to use.
Yeah,
but not very easy to like understand the actual mechanics and working of it. But I suppose we don't have to understand all of that. Yeah. Just that if money goes out, then some money is being taken from that as profit. And then you're getting profit on the FX. And you're also getting profit on the fact that you probably have a balance in the account overnight.
Yeah,
you know, that you're holding cash. So yeah, all good. Very interesting. Well,
moving on, what else has been on your watch list this week? What it's been a good week on some.
Well, we had I think we'll start with Contango, which we had a very interesting chat with Carl, which has definitely let's put it this way, separated opinions. From my perspective, I think Carl was extremely clear and truthful about what was going to be happening with Contango. Revenues towards the end of this year from the first coking plant. Coal's going to be coming out of the ground sort of within the next few weeks. And they have so much coal that effectively this company could be a £1 billion company in a few years' time. You know, agreements by all accounts are being worked out with the Zimbabwe government for 400,000 tons of coking coal production as a minimum. Talking about having 150,000 coking battery coking coal operations, and you know, 1, 2, 3, maybe even more of those as time goes by. So I see it's a fantastic play, but I think the market in general, and certainly a few people who were revving it up, had sort of looked at it and said, "No, is revenue coming straight away? Revenue coming straight away?" And it never was.
I think the problem is, and we'll come on to this one later on, we'll discuss this one in more detail. I think they thought it was going to be a Ben style, you know, it was going to be revenue generative within, Q1. And it wasn't, it was never, you know, and the narrative was wrong that was out there. And you could see it all over Twitter. And you're just thinking, they're going to be in for a bit of a shock, really, when they fight, because that story has been painted was completely wrong. And it needed to be put out there to correct that.
And it's been done now. And we can go from a very solid base that's there. And this year's got buckets of potential. And I fully expect it to go back and higher than where it was. But this will be on the story of them achieving the objectives that they've got, which are all lined up now. I spoke again with Carl today, and we're having another meeting on Monday to talk about the different objectives. And then we'll put that out so people can see these are the objectives they're trying to hit. And, hopefully they'll be hit this year. And this will be, I think, a very, very profitable show to be involved in. Moving straight from Contango, we move to another metallurgical coal play, which, both these plays are in our top 12, by the way, for this year, and we're very confident with both. But Ben's Creek.
Isn't it? Ben's Creek's been the gift that just keeps on giving. It just seems to rise, consolidate, right, and it's not spiking. It's just a slow burn.
And it's nowhere near where it's going to be. Nowhere near. No. I mean, based on revenue, I think even you look at it now, and maybe it's 1.5 times revenue that it'll produce this year, maybe, but not even, I don't think. Sorry, not 1.5 times revenue. It's about 180 million, something like that now, the market cap. And it's predicted, from the numbers I've run anyway, it's predicted EBITDA without any further incremental increases is probably going to be close to 80 to 90 million.
Yeah.
So you're talking about paying 2 times its EBITDA, which is ridiculous for anything like that. I mean, 7 has to be the minimum. And that's a company like Warrior Met Coal, which is in deep debt and strikes going on and all the rest of it. So it has to be higher than that. It probably could be times 10, which would place it probably at 800, 900 million pounds.
The news was interesting because they just announced this week, at the end of the week, that they'd issued a second convertible loan note for the tune of, I think, $6 million. So you always get on the group, don't you? Oh, more dilution, more issue of equity and all this, and you're like, but this is a growth company. This isn't just a company that is, that's just sinking holes like a wildcat drill program. This is, there's money coming in. He doesn't want to take away too much of the money for working capital and wages and things like that. But I think it's a great way of funding it. And it just feels to me like he's talked about further acquisitions. It just feels like around the corner, there could be another acquisition. What do you think? I mean, surely that's what the funds are for, right?
Yeah, well, he's discussed it before in different podcasts with us, hasn't he? So, I mean, I would suggest it's odds on, but who knows? I mean, the last time he used the money for part acquisition and part to buy a second high wall miner, which actually is going to arrive on site any minute now, basically, if it's not already there. So the high wall miner, even if he happened to use that money to purchase a third high wall miner on the same ground that they have, would then mean that we'd suddenly go up to 1.2 to 1.3 million tons a year in terms of the production. And all of a sudden, the figures I just quoted to you now would be like out of the sky. That would be too low.
I mean, it certainly feels like it's gearing up to be. And it was always, Adam's always made the statement, or not statement, but he's always said, I really want to grow this to be a billion-dollar company. And not far off 200 million. It does feel that this one could get up to that, 700 million, 800 million market cap. And, and that would drive it. That would then be a $1 billion company. It just feels like the world is your oyster with Ben.
Yeah. And I think it's probable for various different reasons. One, they have the resource. Two, they've got the high wall miners going in there and digging it out. Three, there is an absolute disconnect between supply and demand in the metallurgical coal area. It's a structural deficit now. Structural deficit because basically, structurally, there's not enough metallurgical coal for the demand. So, you've seen metallurgical coal at an all-time high for High Vol B of, I think, $345 a ton. And it hasn't changed other than continue to go up from about $290, $300 when we first started talking about it, I think. And now it's at $345. And I think it's going to stay there or possibly even go higher because ultimately there just isn't enough. There is a structural problem with the supply-demand equation. Everybody wants the metallurgical coal to add to the iron ore to produce the steel. It's not going away. We need the steel for the infrastructure. The infrastructure bill in America, infrastructure bill in Europe, infrastructure bill even in the UK to build all sorts of stuff. And, for the foreseeable future, I think for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, this isn't going away because there isn't anybody or any government saying, oh, yeah, you can go and build a new coal mine because they don't want coal. No. So the structural thing, I think, isn't going to go away. So both Ben and Contango are absolutely prime candidates that they're going to make excess profits in the next 5 years, in my view, and maybe longer.
Yeah, but and you've got the offtake partner. Sure. You've got the offtake partner there. I think Integrity, who are literally screaming at him for this. We need it. We need it.
No, they've taken it by unwashed and by road because they need it so badly. So, I mean, what more can you say? So, as you say, Ben is the gift that keeps on giving. I fully expect Ben to be a pound within, give us a 3 to 6 months at the longest, I think. And then I think towards the end of this year, it's very likely you're going to get a 10p dividend because that was what Adam's promise was, that he wanted to give that money back to the initial shareholders who backed him in the first place.
Moving on, what about Cloudbreak this week? I mean, we obviously interviewed Kyler, didn't we, for the midweek, which was great to see him. He's not been on for a while. We had Rory on, Rory Cutloflu, the chief operating officer, yeah. the geologist from Cloudbreak, the royalty generator or project generator company, who've got 17 projects. Very exciting. Obviously, you know, IPO'd at 3p, sat in the 1.5 range for what felt like an eternity. And then all of a sudden, boom, it went off. Volume there, if sentiment changed and everybody started to understand it, you know. And yeah, and also it was helped buoyed along by the fact that Kyler was buying, he owns 20% of the company. Now he bought 27.2 million shares at 3p, which was a great sign of, you know, support and belief in the company. We said we've always talked about skin in the game. And for me, that says it all if he's willing to put 20% of his money in now. So he's a 20% shareholder. And they obviously announced the news that Allied, they'd gone on another project with Allied Copper, Klondike. And yeah, it's moved to, I think, 5.5p today. So it's gone crazy. I think it's probably our biggest riser, right, in the top 20 or top 12.
Yeah, absolutely. 5.5 was our projected annual.
And we recommended that one at like 1.8, and we had a target of 5.5. So well done. If you got in on that, then what we'll say is it's hit the target, you know, the first one to actually hit that target.
I think it's got plenty more to go. I think if you look at Zach's bulletin board heroes, he was expecting 8 to 9p once it was over the 4p, I think it was. Yeah, and so if you've invested in that, finished on Friday there at 5.4p, so that's exactly 200% up since we recommended it. So
I hope people are taking profit on it as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, isn't it? You know, and even Kyler says, well, we mentioned it, there will be sellers, but you know what? Selling's good, and who wouldn't take some off the table, right?
Yeah, no, you should take some profit. That's the whole point. I mean, I don't think anything rises in a straight line. We saw that with CDL this week, didn't we? It went to 5p, crashed back down to 3.2 or something, and now it's back over 5p again. So if you'd actually played that right, and I know a couple of guys who did, yeah, it was very good. Unfortunately, those guys were not me and Phil, but a couple of guys did, and neither of us would listen to each other. So yeah, CDL's
been, it's been brilliant, and it does feel like it can, you know, the buying pressure. I've been watching some of the level two over the last few sessions, and I do feel like there's a lot of buying pressure there, and it's still, you know, we hear that there's potentially buyers in the background, you know, that there's a lot of overseas investors who want in on it, and it could continue to really, because there's not a massive amount. I mean, look at what do we worked out, the free float's probably something like 40%, which is not a massive amount. There's not a massive amount of shares in issue, full stop, is there? It's like 400 million or 480 or something like that, I think, off the top of my head.
380.
So 380 mil. Kyler's got like 20% of that. There's a lot of the Cronin Capital guys as well have got a lot of stock in it. So, you know, it's quite sticky now, I bet.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, you're looking at a 15 million market cap now. It's not expensive for what it is. When we compare it to its peers in the market, I think we did this when we did the Kyler interview as well. 50, 60 million pounds are other royalty plays and other generators that are on the UK market. And it's 15 million pounds at the minute. So yeah, 389 million shares in issue. And, you know, I don't know whether you got the figures to hand there, Phil, but how many shares were traded in CDL this week? Because it was 18,784,000 on Friday. I think it could be close to 30-40% of the company was traded this week.
It didn't even have any trades, you know, like on the 21st and 20th of Jan, zero trades, 30,000 the next day, 30,000. That's the thing that beggars belief. It's like, and I always say this, is some people say, oh, it's a stock, it's forgotten, no one, it'll never see any good. And like, I hate the phrase, every dog, it's not a dog, but every dog has its day. Doesn't mean it's a dog, as in a dog of a share. It's reality is sentiment can change like the wind, and you can see a stock that trades zero. And that's when you should, and that's the thing, isn't it? We've said this before. That's when you should be loading up on these stocks, when nobody out, you know, when the low volume, you build your position, you don't have to do it all in one, because sometimes you go in and you buy too high, but on any weakness, you can start staggering in, you know, building it in different size trades. And once you've got your amount, you can sit back and think, well, I've done my research, and I'm in on it. I mean, you know, if you'd have put 10 grand in this, I think we did the you know, we put 10 grand in each of the 12 stocks, and we can come to that later on. But your 10 grand in this now at 1.625 would be worth 180% more, or even, you know, a 200% more. Yeah. So
it'd be worth just over 30 grand.
Yeah.
But I just added those figures up. And basically this week, CDL traded 30% of its share capital in the week. 30%. So if if you don't think that is a bit of movement, then something's wrong. But coming on to your point that you made exactly, which was a share that's had virtually no trades whatsoever, it is MAST.
Yeah.
Okay. MAST. And MAST effectively connected to Kibu.
And you're not going to get you're not going to get that name wrong, are you? MAST. It's an easy word. It's an easy word to pronounce.
And get MAST right, but Kibu MAST I'm going to get wrong. But
Kibo, it's got an O on the end.
Kibo.
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 Keep saying it. Not okay.
Kibo. Basically, if you look back and think you can do it in January, MAST has gone from 10p to 5p on virtually no trades, okay? Hardly any trades in the last few weeks, okay? Or the last 6 to 8 weeks. Today, started looking at it, started telling people a little bit about it because we've just done an interview with the CEO of Kibo, okay? And basically, Kibo owned 55% of MAST. So effectively, these two share prices are totally interlinked. And today, people started talking about it. A few people started buying it. I'd already started buying it myself. And it trades 19 million. More than 6% of its share capital in an afternoon. Okay. Now, it didn't move up that much yet, because there was a few people really dumping huge amounts because they'd obviously been in it, weren't happy from the IPO at 12p. But the IPO, 12 pence, now it's 5.4, massively undervalued. And this brings us on to the electricity story that we were talking about earlier before we came on.
So just quickly, briefly tell people what MAST does in a nutshell and how it can be profitable.
Okay, in a nutshell, MAST has gas peaking. So basically, it has sites around the United Kingdom that are set up to basically make sure that the UK grid can survive peaks and troughs of having electricity. So they're turned on at the right time so that the electricity does not go out. So if the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine, which is probably most of the time in the UK, basically, these things get switched on. Now, if you've looked at some, you've been watching the press, then basically the highest price ever paid for these gas things was paid this week.
Yeah.
In one of the auctions.
We're at an all-time high for the kilowatt hours, aren't we, basically?
All-time high, £75 or $101.70 per kilowatt.
So wind back when we interviewed Louis it was probably November time, wasn't it, when we first talked to him.
Yeah.
In the UK, we discussed those figures about what were they then when they were a profitable company.
We discussed the monthly kilowatt value of what he talked about, which was £5,000 per kilowatt. That's all they're allowed to quote. Okay. Now, if you have 5,000 kilowatts at £75, okay, now maybe you don't get £75 on all of it, but we're just doing calculations for the sake of it, okay?
Yeah.
That means that you need about 67 hours of production in your peaking to actually get that 5,000 kilowatt, which is what you should value these things at, okay? Now, the actual amount allowable was 1500 hours, okay, per month. Now, actually, the 1500 hours has just been upgraded by the British government that you can now use your peakers for 4000 hours. So you do the maths on £75 per kilowatt hour, and you can now run this plant for 4000 hours. And there is total demand for these things because basically there's not enough of them. So I don't even want to do the maths because it's a lot.
Yeah, and obviously we're at a time where energy prices are at an all-time high. They've announced that the average UK household will spend 50%, that's 50% more in 2022 than they did in 2021. So they've gone up, you know, that's a big drain on any household's, you know,
yep,
income, cash flow, whatever you want to refer to it as. So, and so demand is high. As you can tell, with the government have moved the goalpost to allow more reserve energy coming into the grid, because obviously demand's there and obviously prices are high. And also, looking out the window here, we're in the middle of Storm Eunice. We've seen, you know, winds battering the UK. Storms seem to be becoming more prevalent. You know, we're here in the north in Yorkshire and Humberside and places like that, that they've had trees down. They've had no energy for 2 weeks. So locally wise, you know, as pylons are taken down, then there's going to be these localized. I mean, like looking at Mass, they've got three different projects or three different sites. You've got Rochdale, Bordersley, and Pybridge, and they're all scattered around different parts of the UK. So what I'm trying to say is that as storms are affecting and there's more outages, then the demand on these different units around the UK is going to be increased.
Yeah, it's going to be exponentially increased. I just reduced the figure slightly and times it by the 20, you know, the monthly figure, times it by 12, and then times it by the 20 megawatts that basically currently exist and will all be online by the end of March, from what we understand, for Mast. And that produces an annual revenue of £7.5 million. Now, what's the current market cap of Mast?
Bang on 10 million.
Okay, so basically, the revenue is £7.5 million and the costs are not very much. Okay. So you could be talking about maybe 4-5 million EBITDA on those plants. Now, again, these are all estimations, so please don't take them as read, but do your own research. But basically, the amount of revenue these things are producing is 4-5 times what it was even a year ago. Okay. And we all know why, because obviously the price of these things have gone up significantly. And yeah, so for me, I look at Mass now and really how it's worth what it is now, just over 5p. As we said, IPO'd at 12p. I mean, really, it should be back to that IPO price in a matter of,
yeah, and just looking at some of the numbers in terms of the megawatts. So you've got like Pybridge, which is about 9 megawatts. And then the other two bring that value, the total at the moment, around roughly about 20 megawatts, right? And they had a figure, or when they put the prospectus together, I believe, they had a figure of something like the drive to, they want to try and get to 71 megawatts, which is the number of sites that are currently being assessed. So let's say, you know, end of this year or in you know, 1 year's time, so end of Q1 2023, then hopefully that 71 megawatts will be online. And then the larger portfolio was 300 megawatts. And that was what they aimed to establish in the UK. I've not done the maths on what one, you know, what each megawatt means, but I just think that, you know, with 20 megawatts and the EBITDA that they're generating now, it's just you're getting in right at the beginning of the story. And I think they're very likely to reach that 300 megawatt figure. What do you think?
No, I think it's going to happen, because there's a big requirement for them. And they're obviously hunting around. A few people were also talking about, oh, they're going to have to raise. Well, no, this is the whole system, isn't it? They now have three places which they can actually now take bank loans on to then build the next ones and the next ones and the next ones. So the anticipation from what we did that when we did the interview with Louis was that they would have probably 70 plus megawatts on the books by the end of this year, but maybe only 40 to 50 operational. And then the goal was over a 3 year period or thereabouts that it would go to 300 megawatts. Now, if you use the price of today in that 300 megawatts, then, you know, the numbers are astronomical in terms of what you're talking about. You're talking about, even if we use the 5,000 they're talking about, and actually the price is five times that now, you're talking about 15 million of EBITDA £15 million of EBITDA in an electric producing consumer orientated stock,
which is effectively seen as a utility, right?
It's a utility. So you've got to have a look at PE of at least 15 or maybe 20, but let's use 15. Then you've got a market cap, £225 million. And that's based on the £5,000 per month per megawatt. And we know already that's ridiculous because it's at least 4 to 5 to 6 times higher than that now. So, I mean,
without blowing our own trumpets or patting our own backs, whatever you want to say to it, we when we saw Ben come to market, we realized it was really priced to fly, and it was cheap, and it's done really well. And it still does, as we said, we still feel like it's the beginning of the journey. You know, we're not even the end of the beginning. Do you know what I mean? That's how it feels. But with Mast IPOing at 12p, think of the value you're getting in now at 5.65, you know, under 6 pence. You're getting 50% reduction. So, you know, it's like buy one, get one free right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we see it as being a revenue generative. We were picking stocks that are EBITDA, the revenue generative. You've got good EBITDA. And this one for me is screaming out as a buy for just a buy and hold and watch these megawatts increase as they build these more of these plants.
Do you know what? I think I'll make a statement. It could be a really boring 10 bagger.
Yeah.
It could be a really, really boring 10 bagger over 3 years.
But it doesn't matter because the outcome's the same. Where are you going to get 1,000%?
Yeah, no, but could
tell me which post office account you're going to get to 1,000% from. I'll deposit my money there tomorrow. But the other thing is, so the interesting thing, we made this statement before, is Kibo or Kibu has 55% of the shares in Mast. Okay, right. So we've established that. Now, when Mast was 20 million, which wasn't that long ago because it's dropped from 20 to 10, Kibo was valued at nowhere near even half the value, you know, of the 55% of the value. Right, there was a disconnect. Now, ironically, Mast has dropped down to 10 and Kibo's at 5, and it's getting a little bit more like the value. But that's not assuming any of the value of the Kibo assets, which is, we've talked about the coal mines, which could result in a sale within, I don't know, X number of months. I'm not going to put any time scale in it, but it could come in the future. But one aspect that we've not discussed about Kibo, which was announced this week, which saw very little reaction, was the fact that they've moved into green energy, from plastic waste, non-recyclable plastics, which are a scourge of the planet, into syngas and hydrogen and other byproducts, heat, electrical, you know, it can supply the local plant with heat, with energy, you know, that sort of thing. So what do you think about that? The move from coal, the thermal coal, everybody, the Greta Thunbergs are all crying away at it, coal, thermal coal. And now they've gone completely 360 degrees and they've gone, we're going to go into green energy.
Yeah, I think it's admirable. I think ultimately the coal was probably profitable and in a country like South Africa is probably required. But the business model they've decided to follow, partly I think because of Mast and the rollout of Mast from Kibu, has basically meant that this is the way they've decided to go. You know, Kibu is going to be a green energy company. It's as simple as that as it goes on. And also the other RNS came out for them borrowing the £3 million that they needed to then activate that process. And when we had a discussion about that, you know, it's non-dilutive initially and there's warrants attached to it. So basically those warrants are going to be paid to Kibu as payment. Yes, there will be more shares issued because of that, but ultimately they're going to get the cash for that. So you can argue that's not really dilutive. And, you know, if you really did read that RNS, they can't use the warrants unless they're 30% higher. If they're more than 100% higher, effectively they lose half the warrants. So really, I think it's an extremely good deal for borrowing the money. And this allows now Kibo to move on with its green initiatives. And I mean, to put it in perspective, we've just had the conversation about Mast and the potential for Mast. And, you know, Kibo is the biggest shareholder, 55%. So it's like, you know, take your pick. You can have Kibo and it has Mast in it and also other assets, or you can go for the Mast and just go with the electric inside the UK. So if you want diversification, South Africa and UK, Kibu is your play. If you want just the UK safe electricity, then Mast is your play.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, I could, but I'll let you do it.
Just the one that's close to my heart, which is Chill. Just creeping on up there. Gone from about 8p to 10p, or 10.5p, I should say. And a roadmap for, I've been talking to a couple of people in the company, and roadmap for what happens next. I think they've finally managed to get the distribution side of things right in the US. There's more products coming out now. And yet, this is a lifestyle chill company, not a CBD necessarily company. And I think that's what people have to start realizing, that the chill brand is going to be a big brand in terms of how it can allow people to chill over time. So that would be my own personal thing. But the last one we said we were going to talk about was GGP or Greatland Gold.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you know, they had an RNS this week, I think. Do you want to speak about that film?
Yeah, I mean, they had a Havieron update, didn't they? Which we sort of went through what they've really achieved over the last, you know, the sort of almost like a milestone RNS. There wasn't really any new information in it, really. There was obviously a statement from Sean Day talking about the 5%, or not the valuation, but just referring to that. And I don't know about you. I mean, I read it a couple of times, and it just felt like it was a little way of saying, come on, Newcrest, stop dragging your heels, you know, get along with it. You know, we're confident in what we've got. It was just almost like a little gentle reminder of this is what we're worth, and this is what we've achieved, sort of thing. You know, there's the pre-feasibility study, which is, I believe, due. There's the MRS, and there's a few things bubbling away. And I guess that's one of the downsides of being in a joint venture, right, is you're at the mercy of of the major or the other partner.
Newcrest in this case, yeah. Yeah, and but there seems to be a bit of uncertainty about Greatland Gold, and yet, I mean, it's massively valued in terms of the amount of millions it's worth, but it seems to be undervalued at this price. That would be the way I see it, in terms of the potential millions of ounces that it's already got and, you know, will continue to receive. And the interesting thing when we talked to Sean a couple of times was they've got a serious number of different plays other than this one as well, which when this one materializes itself in terms of finances, they're going to be able to go for those other plays. I don't have all the details of them, but, you know, he railed them out. I think one was copper. There was a different resource within Greatland Gold as well that he was very keen to explore as well. And that ties nicely in with Artemis Resources, because basically we spoke to Alistair Clayton. And if you want to know more about Artemis, then have a listen to the podcast that we did with
They're not far away from Telfer, are they? They're in quite, I mean, obviously their assets are nowhere near as big as the likes of Havieron and Telfer. But, he alluded to that, didn't he? That they're very close to the plant. He knows the size and scale of it. And I think that they're looking to build up a million pound ounce, resource base there, aren't they? With the drilling, Patterson, they've got Carlo there, and I think they're going to start drilling at the Patterson project in middle of March. So I think it's going to be one of the exciting ones. It could be a very, very small junior GGP, but if you like that region, you know, the whole Patterson region and that part of the Pilbara, as they refer to it, then I think it's a good exposure, isn't it?
Yeah, and the interesting thing is is an Australian-based company as well that they've rolled this out of now. You know, what's the value of Artemis for what they've got now?
Artemis is 52 million cap.
So 52 million pounds right now. And I don't think this is their only asset. I think they've got other stuff going on. But this is a main thing that they're moving on.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the spin out, haven't they, of the battery metal company, which are floated on the Australian Stock Exchange, if you remember, and they're doing quite well. Right. Their share price has done pretty well. So, yeah, they've got a few of, and I think they're looking at selling a few of the other assets down as well.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I think we did the sums in that interview, didn't we, about how much of the market cap is actually based on this exploration. So if you ever listen to that, rather than me try and remember what I said, it would be a good idea, I think. So, yeah. So, yeah, and more importantly, just as a last throwaway thing for me, liquidity started to come a little bit back into the market. We've had some winners and things have started to sort of move around again. And this is pretty joyous for us all. You know, we've had some things that have gone up in value, which always makes us feel a bit better. And also that profit can go to the next one that we think is going to go up in value. So, you know, if that continues now, even just for a few weeks more, I think we'll really start to get a motor on personally. What do you think, Phil?
You're right. I think it's really refreshing to see some liquidity coming back into the market. We're seeing, for instance, GST. Obviously, with the FCA approval thing was a big thing. But, you know, of recent times, you know, back in last year, you probably thought that may have moved it 20% and then it would have been sold into and it would have ended flat on the day. But it didn't. It moved it about 85% or even 90% and it dropped back. But it was still, I think it ended up 50% up. So I just feel like we're getting those. People are seeing the value and going, oh, wow, that was a really good. That's a game changing RNS or cracking RNS, as Albert used to say. And for me, that is really refreshing to see. And you know, in the group that we've got, as you know, it's people have, there's more of a positivity there. People are going, it's great. It feels good. I've forgotten what it feels like to take X number of £1,000 off the table. I mean, I saw one guy on Twitter and you feel great. Somebody, you know, somebody tweeted saying, thanks very much, took some money off the table and it's enabled me to go and take the kids to on holiday somewhere. You know what I mean? That's what it's all about, isn't it? I think one of the guys in our group said something like, I was hovering over the sell button, went for a dummy sell, ended up cashing out £6,000 on the CDL or one of them. And he was like, oh, you know, you felt like a bit of a mug. You know, we've all done it. You go for the trade, you end up actually hitting the sell button, panicking or whatever. But he realized the profit. And then he thought, actually, happy days. I took the money. And you do feel good from it when you make that trade. So, yeah, long may it continue. Long may our listeners reap the rewards. You know, obviously the top 12 stocks has got off to a flying start. I think we discussed before when we looked at the portfolio of the, you know, the dummy portfolio, where if you'd have invested 10,000 in each one of the 12, you'd have been something like £28,000 up at this point in the year. So that's great to see. You know, we're picking the right stocks, and you know, if we didn't have the ability or the talent to do it, we wouldn't be chatting. You know, we wouldn't be having this conversation in the first place, and we wouldn't have the listener support that we do. So thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for supporting. And if you've made some money this week, I'll raise a glass to you and say, well done.
Well done, everybody. And I suppose the real well done is for sticking it through with some of these stocks, because it's very easy to give up on some of these over the last period of time. So yeah, patience wins out. We can talk about having some patience even in things like CGNR, which is driving me mad in terms of patience, but it's massively undervalued stock. So here we go. Let's see what happens over the coming weeks and months. So, yeah, have a good weekend. I'm sure you'll raise a glass, Phil. And what are you going to have for roast this Sunday?
Yeah, that's a good question. Do you know what I mean? Do you know, it's like you're getting to that point in winter where I'm getting a bit bored. And you know, people will be going, you can never get bored of a roast. It's an institution. It's as English as it comes, or as British as it comes. The resolve, you have to have a roast on a Sunday. In winter, you obviously have more. It's that warmth, you know, the big hearty meals in winter. It's what it's about. But for me, I'm just getting a bit bored of the Sunday roast at the moment. I don't mean the podcast. I mean the dish.
No, I often alternate with a bit of scouse.
Oh, yeah, I know. Lob scouse.
Or stew, you know. But stew with those beautifully soft potatoes and carrots and nice thick gravy all together is a very warming meal at this time of the year. So
Lancashire hot pot. Have you ever had a proper Lancashire hot pot with the neck of the lamb? And they do it on a slow, and then they put a crust on it. They put a lovely pastry crust, not a puff pastry, but like a short crust. And you have the potatoes in it. You have the carrots. It's got to be done with lamb. I mean, some people use beef, but no, it's got to be neck of lamb. And that for me is, well, being a Lancashire lad, Bayek, that is as good as it gets.
Bayek. No, and Irish stew is a similar situation.
Irish stew, Colcannon and all that lot. I mean, it's, you know, it's...
Beautiful. Have something warm while these winds are blowing around you, and hopefully they don't cause too much damage and they dissipate. We'll go again next week.
Cheers. Have a good weekend, mate.
Yeah, and you. All the best.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.